Colorado's voice. 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
I got that nerd rage. Nerd rage. I got that nerd rage. Nerd rage.
From comics and games to movies and TV, this is the Nerd Show on 1310 KFKA.
Nerd rage.
Nerd rage.
Now here are the nerds.
From the Aloe Fiber Studio, you are listening to The Nerd Show on 103.1 and 1310 KFKA. We are live tonight, so if you want to text us, by all means, feel free to. We are without Nick, but we do have on the phone Scott. Scott, are you there? Scott?
I am here, Micah. Right.
You're
I'm
here.
So thankful to be here, and it's crazy. I'm in San Jose on assignment today. I got to see Guardians last night, so I'm ready to talk about that and excited to talk about all the things that are coming in, all the different areas that are coming up with the writer's strike and some of the stuff that Star Wars released with Visions and just other things that are coming up. So, Micah, glad that you're in studio to support us, and I understand we have a guest in studio as well.
That's right. Emilio, introduce yourself.
Yeah, I'm Emilio.
A little closer to the microphone.
Oh, a little. I'm Emilio, a little closer to the microphone.
You can move that thing if you want, whatever makes you more comfortable. All right, go ahead.
I'm Emilio, a little closer to the microphone.
That's one hell of a last name, Emilio.
Yeah, thank you. So when I was serving in the Marines, everyone just called me V.
V, was Emilio too long?
Yeah, I said V for victory, but it was Vallejos.
Oh, okay.
But thanks for the invite. All
right, so Micah, I'm thinking that we refer to him now as Darth Mike.
Darth Mike? There we go. Well, we
Darth
don't
Mike,
I don't
you
have
know,
a Darth
for
you.
Microphone.
But I do have
Darth. We got to get him a Darth.
Monger. Darth Ambivalus.
Darthus Pincus.
I'm sorry, tonight you're going to have to be Darthus Pincus.
Well, rule of two.
So, what are we talking about first? The little Guardians of the Galaxy?
I think so.
So, Scott, you saw it last night. What are your initial thoughts?
I did. You know, they always talk about how good shows are and great. I did not think this was it. I was just whelmed. You know, I'm going to use a little bit of Clueless reference here. I was not overwhelmed by the show in any way, shape, or form. I was disappointed. I thought the jokes were old and sophomoric, and they'd run their course. And I thought the story arc was great, but I thought that the tugging on the heartstrings that they were doing about Rocket's backstory were phenomenal. And, you know, the over-the-top, tired jokes that they kept pulling and running through the entire show were frustrating and were tiresome, and so I was not a fan. I just wasn't. I tried. I worked really hard to be a fan, but I just couldn't be.
Really? See,
I actually
kind of agree with you on that. I agree. A lot of the jokes just didn't land for me like they did in Volume 1 and Volume 2. But what they did with Rocket was so good, especially, you know, with the animation, really bringing those animals to life, making them more human-like.
Yeah, I felt it was a mixed bag, right? Because it's a send-off, right? We know it's ending, and James Gunn is ending in Marvel, right? He's pivoting. And a lot of these characters have, you know, said, hey, these actors, I'm not going to play this ever again. This is it. This is the final one. So we kind of knew that going in. You know, a couple of disappointing parts, and this is the trouble with releasing 20 different trailers and a build up to a film, is we knew Rocket was going to survive past when we thought he was going to die. Right? You get Star Wars, is Chewie dead? I thought Chewie was dead, and he wasn't. But I didn't see anything in the trailer that gave me any sort of indication that he was going to actually survive. These, we had seen the trailers over and over and over, and we're picking him apart, and I knew he was still alive. So when you get to that climactic scene of like, oh my gosh, they're actually going to kill off someone, because we think they're going to kill off at least one or two of these characters in the film, and sorry for the spoilers, but when you get to that point in the film, it's like, well, no, I've seen the trailer. He's got you know, he's got a key line in this film that's coming up. So, yeah, good send-off. Like the stuff with Gamora and like, are they going to get back together or are they not? And
absolutely.
You know.
I'm glad you brought that up because I thought they were going to get back together and they didn't. I saw them making eyes at each other at the end. I'm like, oh, please don't get back together. Don't do it. And they did.
She goes
back to the Reavers or Roofies or
Ravagers.
Whatever they are. Ravagers.
Roofies.
She goes back to lead them.
Yeah.
And spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, I should have already hit that like 10 times.
Yeah.
What was
Way
I
go,
thinking?
yeah, but you're right.
He goes back to Earth.
Well, and she seems okay with that.
Yeah.
Right? And everyone, the film seems okay with that. Right.
Yeah.
So it's
and
just
I,
like, okay, some closure on that. You know, what do we do? They are different people.
Mm-hmm. As she keeps saying, I'm not your Gamora. I am a different Gamora. But he can't get over that. He keeps seeing her as his Gamora.
Yeah. So do we need to hear the entire In the Meantime song? I love it. But, you know, you hear it in the trailers and they maybe overplayed it a little bit. Some of the song montages were a little bit overdone. I didn't need to see Drax, like, jump into a full-on dance at the end, right? He could have just nodded his head.
No.
There were some pieces there where it's like, okay, well, you know, you're just you're pandering, whatever. But at the same time, how do you close that loop? How do you end it? And, you know, how do you bring it to a close? Because we're not trying to extend this into the greater MCU or next phase or whatever it is. You know, we have to close that loop with these characters. And so how do you do that? I don't know. It's tough, right? You almost can't do it right. But they could have done it better.
You know, I completely agree with you, Emilio. The one thing that I think they could have done that they should have done is when they were going to try and get the data for Rocket and, you know, Drax gets shot, not only in the chest but in the back, I think that should have been the end of him. And I don't, I like Dave Bautista. I like the character that he brought.
Sure.
And they did a decent job with him in the second half of the film. But it's like, that would have been one of the elements where, not everybody comes home. And I am frustrated with that concept. And I thought they handled that really well, kind of in, an Endgame and Infinity War, where not everybody came home, not everybody survived. And they had that opportunity here to do it and to do it well and to give honor to the characters, and they didn't do it. And so we just kept, no matter what gets thrown at them, no matter who tries to shoot them or kill them or whatever else, they somehow miraculously survive in every way, shape, or form. And I they could have done it differently. And I was frustrated by that. And because, as you said, it's a send-off film, and I love that idea with it, we could have let Drax die a hero. We could have had, some of the elements that we didn't see coming up, and you still would have ended up with essentially the core of your next iteration of the Guardians. And again, spoiler alert, at the end of it, we see that, that Adam has joined the Guardians because everybody deserves a second chance, but we didn't have to go through all that. Well, let's put you through the ringer and make you think they're going to die and nobody's going to die and everybody's going to survive. And I struggle with that concept that all of these characters are invincible, but everybody that they fight and battle against are just weak, and I struggle with that.
Well, Drax wasn't strong enough to be killed. But he's just not a strong enough character to die. He's one of the bottom two, in my opinion, of all of them. If you kill him off, it's like there's no emotional attachment to him. So
look,
what's the point?
You don't have to go full Rogue One. Right, you don't have to kill everybody, and just
annihilate. You don't.
And you got to throw a couple of those bones. And it is it's a question I ask myself about the future of these franchises. If you have these multiverses, if you have the same villain in multiple dimensions, if you kill a character and you can bring him back because of time travel or multiverses, at what point do you lose that emotional kind of arc, right? It's like, are they really dead? Are we going to see them again? Even if they die, we could have a funeral, we could cry. That could be the end of the film. and are we going to see them later? And so, I don't know. It's something that you want to keep these franchises going, and they're moneymakers, and I love them. I enjoy them. I'm going to see the next 30. Like, you know, sign me up. I'll pre-buy all the net future tickets. But at the same time, you know, it is something I wonder about. And DC's, you know, going to try to replicate that, right? They're going to bring back the old Batmans, and they're going to bring back some of these characters. And at the same time, sometimes you want that finality. You want to know, like, if the character dies, they die, right? And that's it. Yeah. And I cried, and I got emotional, and that's it. I moved on. And you have flashbacks, some, you know, in a future film or a future show, but they really did die. So, you know, to me, it's all the same.
If they had killed a character, which character would you think would work?
Well, probably depending on the actor that doesn't want to do any of these future films or shows, right? If they say
Dave Bautista,
yeah, well, okay, yeah, call him out. If he says, "Hey, look, I'm done, and I want to do more, I don't know, M. Night Shyamalan films or whatever. I want to be taken seriously as an actor." And it was great. Thank you, Marvel. But I'm done. Great. This is a good opportunity, right? Kill two birds with one stone. Get to send him off. Get to sunset that character. I don't have to worry about seeing some other super-built former wrestler, you know, try to fill that role. Yeah, let's do this. And I, you know, even though you think he was kind of a bit character and, yeah, you know, kind of like the ha-ha, you know, side, like, character, still, I would have been like, oh, okay, you know, it's... Drax, yeah, well, I miss, you know.
I liked his ending. I liked his ending where he kind of became that father. We always knew that he was a father, that he cared about his family because he was always looking for revenge. I liked the fact that he actually was kind of a father in a way. Scott, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that the fact that they didn't kill him off and they let him continue on, I think the arc that they took with him was the best approach. I think giving him that purpose and that focus, and, you know, and when when Nebula says that, or not Nebula, but I'm thinking of the empath. What's the other character?
Mantis.
Oh my gosh, I'm blanking on it. Mantis. When Mantis says you're a father, I like the way they did that. So the fact that they didn't kill him off, I think they did the best they could with him, with the character that they had. But again, I just, you know, there's so many elements of it that just seem to, I don't know. I felt like the very first Guardians of the Galaxy pushed the envelope. It was great. It was humorous. It was funny. They did great with it. And I felt like they just kept trying to go, okay, we got away with this. Let's see what more we can get away with in the second one. And it wasn't as good, but it was still funny. And then this one, even more so. You know, I look at it this way. I own Guardians of the Galaxy 1 and 2 on physical media because I always want to have them. I never want to lose them. I won't buy this one on physical media. I don't need to ever have to go back and watch this film again to enjoy it. The other ones I've watched over and over because I enjoyed them. This film was a one and done for me. I don't need to see it again. I am curious to see what they're going to do with Star-Lord. Because of the end credit scenes and what we saw from that, I do think there's some opportunities to do some fun stuff with the next iteration of Guardians as Rocket being the captain. But overall, I felt like this film was sort of, it was done because somebody said it needed to be done. And I think James Gunn took a lot of creative liberties to get it done because it was his last film and his send off. And I don't think they pulled off what they were hoping to accomplish. At least in my opinion. I wasn't a fan.
In my mind, emotionally, in a lot of ways, they pulled it off. In some ways, not killing off certain characters or not bringing to a satisfying end. Like Nebula, I would have loved to have seen her die. I actually liked Nebula in this movie. But she doesn't really serve too much of a purpose in my mind in this. I mean, maybe she's going to go on in another movie and be a hero, but she's just kind of a black character. Without Gamora, she's just kind of there.
Yeah, it does lead me to wonder who and what is next, right? Mm-hmm. So you've got Ant-Man Quantumania, right? You've got
Loki, that was a turd.
You got the Loki series. You've got the Marvels that are coming up. You've got, you know, all of these pieces that have been kind of thrown together. And we've, I think what we were all longing for is that Avengers, Infinity War, Endgame, like, you know, you want that big bad, right? And you want the core team. And you got some of these side characters and they're fun and everything else. But it's hard to see where, you know, and where and how they pull all that together. And this is a good example of that. Like, what do you do with the Guardians? Sure, you know, you spin a couple of them off and replace a couple of voice characters. But where are we going? And what's next? And if you have a million Kangs out there, then how do you pull it all together? And so outside of the film, you know, I won't say I'm concerned. Like I said, sign me up. I'll pre-buy all the tickets and I'm going to go see all of these. But what do you do next? And I'm not sure if it's really come together next, you know, and what that next step is.
I don't know how they top Thanos. I just having a million of the same guy, just, I don't know. It seems like too big of an option, so big and so scary that it's, you know, it's not possible. So it's not going to happen. Having that one bad guy, you're like, oh, he's a big bad guy, but I know they can beat him. I know the odds aren't, you know, in their favor, but they can still beat him. And then they don't beat him. That was impactful. With this, it's like the odds are way too much in the enemy's favor, but they're still going to win.
Yeah, well, and once you open up that can of worms of time travel and, you know, multiverses, then, yeah, I mean, the answer is, well, we can always go fix it, right? You know, in the back of my mind, you can always go back and repair that, or you can fix it, or you can change it, or you can alter it. And maybe you come up with something where it's this is it. It's final. This is the one.
You got to crash all the dimensions together and just create one.
Yeah, but the play is, you know, infinite films that approach $1 billion in sales, right? That's the goal.
Yeah, but they have to be good. They have to be fun, because at some point, if you get a lot of Ant-Mans back-to-back, I'm just going to say this. I think Ant-Man was the worst trilogy. What do you guys think?
They were fun, and they tied into the MCU, right? That's the best. And so going back to the anecdote of, hey, would I buy this? Would I get it on DVD and Blu-ray and Laserdisc and VHS? And, you know, would I pay for streaming? You know,
going old school.
Yeah, would I
Betamax.
Do all of that? Right. You know, so what are the ones that end up in the final collection? Right. These are the ones I'm passing off to my great grandkids, and they'll never use this media. That is the test, right? Would I actually go see it a second time? Not watching it because it's on, or, you know, hey, you know, maybe there's a film coming up and it's going to be the final one and I kind of want to binge these. You know, what are those core films? And you're right, Guardians 1 is on the list. No brainer, right? Infinity War, Endgame, absolutely. The Ant-Mans, only, you know, if you're binging them to kind of watch, you know, you say, hey, I want to get through 600 of these, you know, 10 years from now to get to that next film. Sure, I guess some of these make the list. But you're right. A lot of these aren't on there. And they don't have to all – they can't all be knocked out of the park. But you know, at some point, I do want to see some gelling. There's this Star Wars fatigue, right, out there. And there was. It's like we waited 14 years for a film. And, well – I mean, you gave us a Jamaican lizard, but that's okay. You know, we got the next trilogy. And then after that, we waited for a while. And, yeah, there's, you know, there's some great animated series and there's comics and, there, you know, maybe a couple of okay games. And then all of a sudden, it's film, spinoff film, fake Han Solo, film, series.
So that's how you feel about the Han Solo movie.
Yeah, we're not going to get into that, but yes.
Oh, I would love to get into that at some point with you.
But, it, you know, they admit, and I think, misfire, right? And Harry Potter, you know, we're getting way off track here, but, you know, that whole world is about to have a big test. They're about to start a TV series. Mm-hmm. making every single series one of the books. And in my mind, in a lot of people's minds, it's the Chris Columbus films. It's that Hogwarts. It's that Harry. It's that Hermione. And
which ones are the Chris Columbus?
I think he directed the first couple. But okay. He created, you know, if you go to Universal Studios, that Hogwarts is not the Hogwarts from the book. It's not the little sketch, right? It's from the films, right? That Gringotts Bank, that's from the films. And so they created this world, and in our minds, that's the world. And so now they're going to create a TV series, and we're going to sit through that, and we're going to watch it. But is that going to be the Harry Potter? So, you know, is it canon? Is it not canon? You know, how does this fit in with the rest of the world? You can go all day on this stuff. I worry with fatigue, and I worry a little bit when you can just rewrite the rules anytime you want and say, okay, we're just going to bring them back. Or, you know, yes, you've got a million big bads. So how do we deal with that? Did we get all of them? Did we kill all of them? Yeah. I don't know.
You want to know how I determine something is canon? It's if I like it or not.
There you go.
If I don't like it, it's no longer canon. Picard Season 2 and 3. Stay tuned. More Nerd Show coming up next on 103.1 and 1310 KFK. Okay, best part of Guardians of the Galaxy, I have to say, is Redbone. The Redbone song that I played coming out. That was a great song. Welcome back to the Nerd Show, 103.1 and 1310 KFK. If you want to text us, you can text us on our text line, and that is...
Text 888-530-0043.
In case you missed it...
Text 888-530-0043.
Now, we were talking during the break about the music in Guardians of the Galaxy 3. Now, V, what did you say?
Yeah, I think the first two had it spot on, right? And one of the things I enjoy about Guardians is seeing that music kind of revived for the next generation. So I've got kiddos, right? I hang with kiddos. No, I don't. I don't steal kiddos and throw them in vans. But, you know, it's kind of fun to see because, you know, they're playing those songs like, hey, Alexa, play blank, blank, blank. And I'm just like, oh, wow, where'd you hear that? Well, you know, those movies and shows you make me watch. So I think that's one of the things that they do well, and I think they've done a great job of it. It felt a little bit overdone in Guardians 3, right?
Yeah,
and
I agree.
You know, maybe because it was some of the trailer music was in the films, but then they actually played, like, the whole song. You know, or three quarters of the song, you're used to seeing like a snippet of it and saying like, oh yeah, I kind of remember that song.
Yeah, but so, I could listen to Crazy on You all day.
Yeah, like, well, and I brought up In the Meantime. I love that song all day long, right? But, you know, at some point in the film, like, you know, I don't know, our attention spans are getting shorter or whatever. You have to have that balance. So you want to have that. It needs to make sense in the context of the film. You know, talked about that with the new Super Mario Brothers movie. Like, hey, why don't you just use Mario Brothers game music throughout the whole film? Why did you have to throw in a little bit of AC/DC? But sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't.
Because AC/DC is popular.
You can always throw down some AC/DC and no one's going to complain. But
I'll complain if it doesn't fit. If it doesn't fit, then don't use it.
Sure. Well, and in this film, it did feel like, okay, we're doing this with the soundtracks, and we've done it well with the first and the second. With the third one, it did feel like we were pushing a little bit, you know, stretching a little bit on those.
Well, and I'm going to jump in because I agree with you both in that regard, and I think the element that we had that tied both the first and the second film together is that, you know, we had that Volume 1 that, you know, that Star-Lord gets, you know, from his mom. You know, in that whole element. Yeah, and then The Gift, which was Volume 2. And so you had that kind of element, and she had given him that second soundtrack, and we didn't get to see it. We didn't get to hear it in the first film, and then that became kind of the underlying current in the music of the second. And then, you know, we see kind of, okay, now we've got an iPod, and now we've got all these musics of different generations that somehow just, you know, appears out of nowhere magically in 3, and they may have made reference to it and to and how they got that other information and whatever else, but it was sort of like, this is how we're defining the music that's going to be in this film, and then to continue on for Rocket. And even like the little nod at the end when, you know, Rocket gets the gift from Star-Lord and he goes, I went back to get this for you. And it's like, well, here's where this music come from. But it was so much at the end of the film, and they kept trying to introduce it at the beginning, that it, you know, didn't quite, I didn't think it flowed. It felt forced. It felt like, we're going to put this in here so you guys will get, this is where we're getting the music from and everything else, and the aspect that, and I think that there were some elements and callbacks to the holiday special that they did for that, which again was kind of like, okay, I guess that's now part of that, you know, the series, that you have to include the holiday special as a part of it.
I didn't care for the holiday special. I thought the holiday special was just kind of meh.
Well, I enjoyed it. I had a ton of eggnog that night. But you
spiked
know.
Eggnog? Irish eggnog?
Yeah. You do wonder, though, you know, with James Gunn and obviously the controversy of him being fired and hired back and, you know, all of that. Do you think maybe there was a lot of tugging, you know, you can do this, you can't do that, let's put some restraints on this, and by the way, you're leaving to our competitor? You know, do you think some of that played into it, or do you think it was, hey, we have to finish this, we have to end it, we've got a three, we're on contract, we've got everybody signed up, let's just do this and hammer it out? You know, what do you know, there's got to be some element there in play, because it, although I did enjoy it, so I'm not a hater, you know, would I buy it? No. Did I enjoy it? Yes. Am I going to go see it in the theaters again? Probably not. Will I stream it next, you know, when it comes out on streaming? Maybe. But, you know, there probably is a little bit of that element in play, right? Because even for producers and directors and actors that are on contract and thinking they're going to be in multiple films, still there's that strife, right? There's that tug of war between, you know, ownership, a.k.a. Disney, Marvel, and James Gunn and the producers and – you know, so do you think that was an element there, that they just, this is what came out of them all finally agreeing, okay, this is the product we can put out. No, you can't do that. No, you can't be snarky. You know, no snide remarks, no flipping us off on the way out the door, no killing everybody.
Well, they did have the F word in there.
Once.
Yeah.
They did.
Once.
You're allowed.
And I think that it was done well. I knew that that was coming. Everybody talked about it, that was going to be a sure. big element, that, you know, we hear that. And it was placed really well. I, you know, and not that I'm an advocate of using that word whenever you need to or whatever else, but I felt that how it was done in dialogue actually worked. It made sense. And, you know, I didn't feel like it was forced. It was kind of fun, but it was one of those elements that just added to it. And to your earlier question, I think that speaks to a deeper element that I struggle with in the film. The fact that we're evaluating and critiquing a film, and we're adding that filter into the conversation about, well, you know, it was his last film and he was going out and he's got to do this and contractually obligated. As a everyday, you know, film goer, who cares? I don't want to be thinking about that. I don't want to add that to my evaluation and my enjoyment and appreciation of film. I just want to enjoy the film for what it has to deliver. And it hurts me and it bothers me that we're even talking about it, because it has to be a part of our assessment and narrative and discussion about the film, as opposed to going, this is a great film on its merits and they did a great job and blah, blah, blah. We're having to filter it and to couch it and to evaluate it based on external forces that, as a normal film goer, you shouldn't have to worry about.
Sure. Yeah, I just, you know, I completely agree. I also think that, you know, this is something that directors struggle with throughout their whole career. And some of them will do the two big box office films, and then they'll go do their pet project. And they'll say, well, you know, those two big box office smash films, that paid for the one I really wanted to do or had creative control over.
Sure.
And so I always am thinking that in the back of my mind, like, okay, who was pulling the strings and who had the final say on this, and, you know, and how did that play out? But you're right. At the end of the day, we're all buying tickets and, you know, we're all invested in this thing. And you're right. We're showing up and they're turning off the lights and we're watching.
So after hearing all this, should I assume that this is not Nerd Show approved?
I would vote no. But I'm only one of three voices on the show today, and I think, you know, because Darth Spinkus is unavailable and we have Emilio in his stead, I think he gets a say equal to mine and yours, Micah. So my vote is no, but if we get two thumbs up, then it's Nerd Show approved or whatever. But that, mine is no. I would not approve it.
Marines first.
God, in the context of all of the history,
well,
of
it has to be 8.5 out of 10. So you got to give it an 85%. Let's say 80. Let's drop it to 80 for today.
Then I'd have to say no.
Uh-oh.
Step of approval.
No! Yeah. Just been revoked.
Well, I wouldn't give it an 8.5 or an 80 either, but, you know, whatever. It was good enough to watch in theaters. I'm not going to buy it. Anyway, we'll be back after this break on 103.1 and 1310 KFK. Stick with us. Welcome back to the Nerd Show on 103.1 and 1310 KFK. We are in the Aloe Fiber Studios. It's the Nerd Show with Scott, Micah, and Emilio. Scott, what are we talking about in this segment?
Well, you know, it was funny because Emilio talked a little bit about kind of the Star Wars fatigue and stuff like that, and I have really been enthralled, and I haven't gotten through the whole series yet, but I really have loved what I have seen so far out of season two of Star Wars Visions. And, you know, we talked about season one when it came out, you know, 6 months, a year ago, whenever that was. And I was pretty critical of it. I thought that they were trying to do things that were really outside the norm and were like recreating the stories that we were aware of. And the thing that I have absolutely loved about what I've seen so far of season two is that they're not doing that. And the first two episodes in particular, I thought were phenomenal. They were great stories that fit within the Star Wars universe, but didn't try to rewrite or recreate or retell a story that we've already seen. I have just absolutely loved it. And, you know, I was talking a little bit, I have a buddy here in San Jose that I give a shout out to, James, and we were talking about this a little bit recently, that the way that they've done season two, at least what I've seen so far, I've really enjoyed both visually and thematically and even from a story perspective, the way that we're diving into other elements of Star Wars and the culture without it being too, you know, trying to recreate what we've already seen in a new format and new structure. And so I don't know, I'd be curious, you know, both of you, what you think about that. And Emilio, certainly love to hear what you think, but I really liked it.
Well, you mentioned how things are different. I think part of the reason why things are different is not everything is from Asia. You have a studio from South Africa. You have a studio from Britain. You have a studio from France. You have a studio, I think one or two studios from South America. So they've really diversified studios across the world, and that's getting different styles of animation and different stories. And I agree with you. This story is this season's fantastic. Emilio?
Yeah, if there's one thing that is the counter to everything I said before about fatigue and, you know, these endless universes and franchises, is something like this, right? Where it's bigger than the original creator. It's bigger than George Lucas. Yeah. It's bigger than J.K. Rowling, right? They take on a life of their own. And yeah, Visions is one of those kind of rare. I didn't have a problem with the first one, the first season, and I didn't have any issues with it. I didn't love a lot of them. And at the same time, I was like, that's a pretty cool, like, creative take on it. But yeah, I've only seen, I think, three episodes in season two, and I bounced around. You know, admittedly, I jumped to kind of the claymation Wallace and Gromit, you know, one.
That was my least favorite.
Yeah.
I know
I was more curious than anything. But
It is for kids. It doesn't have the humor that Wallace and Gromit did, and I love Wallace and Gromit. God, that came out when I was a kid.
Yeah. But I think the first, it may have been the first or second episode, and it was maybe Sith, and it was this combination.
Yeah, Sith was number one.
Yeah, Sith character, and she's, you know, obviously was going down that path, and, you know, they're trying to draw her back into that, and there was this mix of this artwork, and it was flashing back and forth between, I don't know if it was her artistic vision or the world she was creating. Fantastic. I mean, I would watch 2 hours of that film if you created that.
Not so, my favorite.
Absolutely agree. Yeah, so good. And the other thing about that episode in particular, Sith, was I loved how it started off very black and white. And as it evolved, it got more, you know, full color. See where she was struggling and what she wanted to do. And as it continued to evolve and the story continued to grow, it got more colorful. But you got to see the battle, and it was great. And I really enjoyed it. I love seeing the wheel bike in there. It was like it made me think of, you know, Grievous in episode two. Sure. And so there were some elements that, you know, drew you into the Star Wars universe that really made sense. But it wasn't – we weren't trying to retell a story that's already been told. It was brand new. You know, the second one, you know, there's this element where they go on this little homage to go to this little cave and, you know, fight the Sith. And the Sith comes to take this individual as their apprentice. But just other elements that – fit within the entire universe in a way that made sense, but it didn't take away from anything that we'd already seen before. It didn't retell. It just built and enhanced it. It improved it, and it expanded the universe overall. So I really love that.
Well, did you guys see the one with the two sisters? It's called Into the Stars. It's mm-hmm. the third one. That was one of my favorites, and I was the season was a little was getting better than season one, so I was rather happy. Once episode three hit, I was impressed because I didn't think I would like it, but I liked the animation, and I liked the story, and I liked the music too. Mm-hmm. And by the way, the first episode was a Mexican studio. The third episode, I believe, was the South American, not Colombian, El Salvadorian. Studio.
Well, and I, and here's the funny thing with me. It's not that I'm giving them a pass, but if I'm watching something like this, I don't think it's canon. I don't critique it in the same way that it's a film, right? So a Hogwarts and Harry Potter example, Fantastic Beasts, I'm sitting there and I'm watching these films and I'm thinking, gosh, you know, McGonagall, she should, you know, really, would she have been in that time period at that age, or why are they throwing her in there? I go play Hogwarts Legacy and play through the whole game, and I'm just sitting there like, yeah, this is fun. And some of those Easter eggs and some of those throwbacks to the films, I'm like, ah, that's cute. Yeah, thanks for throwing that in. I kind of feel the same way about this, where, you know, they're shorts and they're from different studios, and I can just sit back and kind of enjoy them and not have to feel like I'm overly critiquing them, or is a Force ghost a real thing?
Just take them for what it's worth. I mean, the two heads one, there. I think it was episode five. There was episode five had kind of a weak plot. To me, it was kind of dumb. But actually, the farther it got in, I actually thought it wasn't bad.
But they're 15 minutes.
Yeah.
You don't feel robbed. Right.
No, I wasn't robbed of my 15 minutes like I was in a lot of the first season. As a matter of fact, the one that came from the French studio, and I mentioned this last week, I thought I was going to hate it. I thought I was going to hate it when I read the title of it. I thought I was going to hate it when I first started watching it. And I thought I was going to hate it when I heard a French accent. But that was actually my favorite. And I gave it a 9 out of 10. I really enjoyed it. And I don't know if I'm the only one who gives it a 9 out of 10, but I thought it was a great story. And if it would only be a better story if it had a bad end. If it had a sad ending, it would get a 10 out of 10. But it, of course, has a happy ending.
Yeah, I haven't seen that one yet. So I can't weigh in positive or negatively, but if what I've seen so far... And I've been through the Wallet and Gromit version episode, and I did the sisters episode, and, you know, I thought they've all been good. And so if it's tracking with those so far, I think I'll enjoy it. I mean, if I had to rate it with what I've seen so far, which is incomplete on the series, I really enjoyed it, and I would be very high in my ranking and my scoring of those. And I think overall, I just appreciate it more because it's a good story. And as Emilio said, or you said, you know, it's 15 minutes. It's not, you know, it's not 2.5 hours that I wish I had back in my life. It's 15 minutes, but they're enjoyable. And I appreciate the story and the elements that are being told throughout that, as opposed to going, well, this is a waste of time. This is stupid. This is dumb. I don't get it.
Yeah, well, and we don't have to throw bones towards diversity and culture and all those things all the time. But in an instance like this, to give some exposure to some of these small studios, how cool for them, right?
And the,
oh, I mean, love it, yep.
And the more exposure you give to some of these studios, I think the more creativity you pull. If you don't get attention to some of these studios, I mean, you could find some gems. Episode 10, I kind of liked. It was weird, but I kind of dug it. I mean, maybe another studio is going to find an idea for a movie in episode 10, or I think it was episode 9. I think they only have 9. But yeah, I liked what they did this season overall. It wasn't great, but it wasn't awful. It was in the middle. Stay tuned. We're coming back in a few minutes on The Nerd Show. Final segment of The Nerd Show on 103.1 and 1310 KFKA. Scott, the writers are on strike. What's going on?
You know, I wish I knew. I just know that that is becoming an impact in certain shows.
We've, Scott, you're in California. You know, you're our spy. Get it together.
I know I'm your spy, but yeah, I'm removed enough from the studios that I don't know what's going on. I haven't been able to tap into anybody right now, but you know, we're hearing elements where there's certain shows, you know, I think I saw earlier this week that they were talking about, you know, The Last of Us Season 2. There's some elements that are having to go on pause. There's other elements where in other shows that have been talked about, you know, whether it's Loki or whether it's some of the other things, that writer strike is going to have an impact because of the things that they're trying to change in motion as you're doing the filming of some of these episodes, that, you know, you have the showrunners and you have the individuals that are trying to make sure you keep continuity, and they don't have access to the writers at this point in time. So, you know, I think it'll be an impact. I'm hearing Stranger Things might be a little bit delayed. Last of Us could be a little bit delayed. I've heard,
no!
I think, Micah, you even said
no!
you think that, you know, Paramount Plus is dead because of this and they're never going to recover. I don't know.
That's what I think.
That's what I'm hearing.
Paramount Plus, they're only CBS, they're only Star Trek. Those are their two main properties. They have a few other little things. I think Paramount Plus is already in trouble. If the writer's strike goes on for much longer, which I don't think it will, not in this day and age. In this day and age, with so many people on social media, so many TV shows that we're all addicted to, it's going to end, and it's going to end quickly. But if it were to go on too much longer, I think Paramount Plus would be hosed. They would be the next one to go, and I think they're the next one to go anyway.
It's certainly a lot of outside pressure, and you're right. Everything gets more accelerated, blown up, right, exposed in this day and age. Things just tend to move quicker. But
and the writers aren't seen as the bad guys. It's the studios who are seen as the bad guys.
Yep.
So they're going to be seen as the arch villains.
Is there like a temporary, you know, AI solution to this, though, where you can get into some chat GPT and just like, hey, we're going
to
write the next few
episodes? Well, that's what they're trying to avoid. That's one of the things the writers are trying to avoid.
It's pretty formulaic. I mean, these story arcs, you know, in sitcoms and, you know, these hardcore crime, you know, dramas. I mean, you and I could write these. So.
Yeah. But the writers, part of what the writers are fighting for is to make it so that they don't use artificial intelligence to write some of these scripts, which would be a huge issue, especially with artificial intelligence becoming more intelligent. I mean, it's not going to replace writers anywhere in the near future, we hope. I crossed my fingers.
Well, and we can get into a whole discussion about the unconscious and conscious bias that's getting built into this AI because of their area that they're able to draw from when they're actually creating some of this stuff by, pulling from all the different elements that they have access to. So I think that there's a detriment, and the creative writers out there, and you know, my fiance's daughter is a creative writing major, and she's really against it. She thinks that there needs to be creative writing that's developed. So I hope that the writer's strike does get resolved quickly so that we can get back to that, because I don't know that you can recreate the creativity of the human mind and eliminate the biases that are built into the technology that we're running with and using today.
Hear, hear.
Yeah, what? And there's always a delicate balance between pushing the envelope, right? And maybe not too much, but just enough to where it's something new and fresh, but it's familiar. And we know we're going to get a laugh here, or we're going to get a cry here.
And on that note, we must end the show. You've been listening to The Nerd Show on 103.1 and 1310 KFK. Nerds, you stay nerdy.